The Oscars are this weekend, and as you may know, through big, blaring, old-school ads, Mank has the most nominations with 10, including Best Picture. The Mank in the title is screenwriter Herman Mankiewicz, who in real life shared the 1942 Best Original Screenplay Oscar with director Orson Welles for the real movie Citizen Kane. Mank tells how Kane was made and how Welles took on publishing titan William Randolph Hearst in the thinly veiled character Charles Foster Kane. The film starts with his death and this word. Okay, we won't give away the role of Rosebud, but in Citizen Kane, we follow a young reporter in flashback trying to figure out what it meant. So, why is Citizen Kane considered, repeat after me, the greatest movie ever made? Well, not always, but once it did top best of lists, why did it? And if you haven't seen it, should you? All questions for Bob Mondello, NPR senior arts critic. Bob, welcome.
Hey, good to be here. I love hearing Rosebud is so nice.
Do you think it's one of the best films or the best film of all time?
Absolutely. It's a very impressive piece of filmmaking, especially for a 25-year-old.
We'll find out why. And that 25-year-old was Orson Welles. Most anticipated film of 1941 when it came out. Remind us, who was Orson Welles?
At 21, he had made the leap from theater to radio. He did a show called War of the Worlds with the Mercury Theater of the Air, a silly show about an alien invasion that had the advantage of the other major networks playing opera at the same time, so people tuned in a little late and missed the fact that it was a show and thought that they were actually hearing a newsreel about an alien invasion, and it panicked the entire East Coast. People thought that the aliens were arriving from outer space. That made him very famous, and RKO gave him a great deal where he could basically make any movie he wanted, and the movie he wanted to make was Citizen Kane.
We have a little bit of that War of the Worlds broadcast.
Cool.
Martian cylinders are crawling all over the country. One outside of Buffalo, one in Chicago, St. Louis. Seem to be time and space.
Yikes. Okay, so Welles was, you know, super famous because of that. Tells the story of Charles Foster Kane, newspaper magnate. You know, I mean, hello. He was so obviously Hearst. Just a little bit more about Hearst.
Well, Hearst was a big deal. He was the original yellow journalist. He had all these newspapers across the country, and he was a very right-wing guy, and he basically encouraged his newspapers to push in certain directions. For instance, he was for the Spanish-American War. He pushed things that most people thought were not a great idea. He was also incredibly rich as a result of all these newspapers, and he had a huge mansion that Welles decided to create or recreate as Xanadu in the movie. I think if you were making it today, you would make it with a stand-in for Rupert Murdoch or somebody like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and maybe had a news operation that he owned that played loose with the facts. Here's a scene with Kane, the newspaper publisher, you know, stand-in for Hearst, hearing from a reporter that he sent to Cuba to investigate the possibility of a war.
Read the cable.
Girls delightful in Cuba, stop.
Could send you prose poems about scenery, but don't feel right spending your money. Stop. There is no war in Cuba. Signed, Wheeler. Any answer?
Yes, dear Wheeler, you provide the prose poems. I'll provide the war.
I'm literally going to make up a war for his newspapers. Here's this 25-year-old, Welles, taking on this newspaper magnate who could kill him like a bug through all of his newspapers. What happened?
Well, Hearst decided he did not want this story out. He went to other studios and tried to get them to buy the film so that they could throw it away. He told his newspapers that he didn't want them to cover it. If they did cover it, they had to trash it. This was really doing damage. On top of which, the other theater chains were at the time were frequently owned by film companies, and the film companies didn't want to touch this. So it was hard to get the film played if, you know, he wouldn't accept advertising in his newspapers. So he did everything he could to kill the film.
Well, but it does have a following. And then it takes a while, maybe a couple decades even, but it suddenly is pronounced one of the best films ever made by other filmmakers. And it's influenced so many of them. Why was it considered so good?
By about the 1960s in Europe, a lot of critics were saying, wait, this is a very impressive piece of filmmaking. And in 1962, there was a poll of critics in which they basically chose this as the greatest film ever made. And after that, a whole lot of people started talking about it. Now, it has always been a critic's darling. What I always tell people about this movie with regard to the technical stuff is that Wells, it was like the movie studio was as big as model train set anybody could have given him. He was learning how to make a movie, and every time he'd come across a technique, he just exploited it like crazy. So that you get all these things. There's something called deep focus, where the thing that's far away from the camera and the thing that's close to the camera, all of that is in focus at once. It's a trick, but it's a gorgeous one, and he exploited it in scene after scene. He did a lot of things with rear projection. He did screen wipes that weren't normal for filmmaking. Don't forget, this is fairly early in the era of sound pictures, and so when he started doing overlapping dialogue, the most directors of that time were trying so hard to make the dialogue clear, it didn't even occur to them to, you know, have people talking over each other.
I tell you, Thompson, a man's dying words.
Oh, where are they?
You don't read the papers. When Charles Foster Kane died, he said just one word.
Rosebud.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, tough guy. Huh?
Yes, Rosebud.
Guy's calling
just
her Rosebud.
Just that one word. But who is she?
What was that?
So he was doing things like that. And later, you know, folks like Robert Altman did that all the time. Lots of other people have picked up the techniques that Wells used.
Well, and he gave his cinematographer, Greg Toland, a free hand, said, do whatever you want. Also shared a credit with him at the end of the film.
Right. And he also said to the lighting guy, just go wild, right? It has elements of German expressionism in it that are just amazing. The movie didn't look like other movies of that period. It just didn't. You know, if you watch Citizen Kane at the beginning and you're just sort of sitting down and you don't know what it is, the opening moments look like a horror film. Very shortly thereafter, you're in a faux newsreel.
Here in Xanadu last week, Xanadu's landlord was laid to rest. A potent figure of our century, America's Kublai Khan, Charles Foster Kane.
Then it becomes this detective story when they send out the guy to find out what Rosebud was. It becomes a sort of a domestic melodrama about Kane's love life. It becomes a backstage farce when he tries to get his girlfriend and then his wife onto the opera stage.
Get the boys out of the floor.
It's as if Wells thought, I may never get another chance to do this. I'm going to do everything. It's a remarkable piece of filmmaking.
Well, and how about the writing? One of the biggest debates in film, and the new movie Mank comes down squarely on the side of Herman Mankiewicz writing the bulk of Citizen Kane. What do you think?
The way I look at it is, Wells brought so much to the look and the feel of the movie, and he, of course, he's playing the lead role, that his authorship of it, you have to count that in, right? But I think I'm guessing that Mankiewicz essentially did the script. By the way, there's one little bit that I'd like to say. I'm an NPR nut, right? And there's an NPR connection to this. Did you know that?
Well, actually, we had Herman Mankiewicz's grandsons, Josh and Ben, on to talk about not just their grandfather, but their father, Frank Mankiewicz, who's a newsman.
Isn't that amazing?
He headed up NPR.
Yeah, I love that fact. And it ties back so nicely to War of the Worlds and radio that I just kind of love it.
We'll have that piece at herenow.org. But meantime, so here's this notion of it being the best film ever made. And Vulture has a great line. They say, that's not a matter of your opinion. It's a piece of data, like the name of the president or the location of Florida.
Oh, yes, absolutely. If you have not seen Citizen Kane, please watch it. It's like a masterclass in filmmaking from a kid. He was a remarkable inspiration for so many filmmakers. I mean, Martin Scorsese and Spielberg, those folks all look at this and just are wowed.
We've been talking with NPR's Bombonello about Orson Welles' Citizen Kane. The film Mank, which tells the story of the writing of Citizen Kane, is up for 10 Oscars this coming weekend. Bob Mondello, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was really fun.
Note to self, rewatch Citizen Kane. It's here and now.